Hi, this is Jean Hewell Chambers, and I today am talking with Terry Vickery. Okay, I'll see if I can edit that out. Let's start again.
Hold on, let me close my door because Kent may get a call and he keeps it on speakerphone. Hang on a second. Okay.
Hi, I'm Jean Hewell Chambers, the woman with the big, fat, crazy idea that we now know as the 70273 Project, and today I'm talking to Terry Vickery. Say hey, Terry.
Hey, Jean.
Terry, even though you won't hear it, you might have heard it then, she can speak with a Southern accent. She doesn't live in the South anymore, but she does have threads of the South still in her cloth, her personal cloth. Welcome, Terry. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be with you.
You know, Terry, you've been with me from the start of this project because we've been friends a pretty long time. And we met, like so many of my good friends and your good friends, on Facebook. Isn't that right?
That's right.
We met, we clicked, and here we are.
Really, if I could add just a bit to that.
Yeah.
We clicked because my husband had a heart attack. Uh-huh. And you being who you are, you reached out to me in a way that was so helpful and held my hand through that experience. And that's when we went from having seen each other's posts on different people's pages to really becoming good friends.
Yeah, I remember that. And Kent's doing well now, right?
He is.
Good. Good, good, good. Well, we share a lot of interests, don't we?
We do.
One thing that comes immediately to mind is grandchildren. And we'll talk more about this in a minute. Also that comes to mind is dahlias.
Yes.
We love our dahlias, don't we?
Well, that's because we got to go see that exquisite dahlia exhibition in Cashers.
Yeah, I remember that.
Two years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago. Do you remember the butterflies that were landed on the feasting on the dahlias?
And oh, absolutely. I've got the pictures to prove it.
Incredible. I mean, we were like just 8 inches away from them.
They were spectacular.
It was amazing. That was an amazing week. We need to do that again. You need to come again. Okay, so grandchildren, tell me about your granddaughter.
Well, her name is Amina, and she lives in Nairobi, Kenya. She was born in South Africa with a serious birth defect, and we'll probably get there, but that is one of my reasons for being involved in the 70273 Project, because she would have been one of the people that would have been killed by the Nazis for having a disability. Her birth defect is called an omphalocele, and that is where the baby's organs are growing outside its body while the mommy's pregnant.
Wow.
And fortunately, our daughter lived in a little village in maybe a town in a different part of South Africa from where Amina was born. And when she went for her typical ultrasound, her little village doctor looked at the ultrasound and knew exactly what he was seeing. The doctors in Pretoria who delivered Amina and who our daughter, Heather, went to see very soon after this was discovered, were amazed that this doctor in the little village recognized what he was seeing when he saw the ultrasound. And the reason he did is because he had been involved in the birth of another baby that he didn't recognize it until the baby was born. And then this child was born, and in Amina's case, it was her stomach and liver and intestines were growing outside her body. Her stomach cavity never closed. And fortunately, after about 12 different medical procedures, and she spent 5 of the first 7 months of her life in the neonatal intensive care unit in Pretoria. But she was able to come home of course, on oxygen and when needing some breathing help. But from that point on, she's been doing pretty well, and now she's very normal. So I often think that had she been, depending on what stage she had been in her journey, had she been in Germany, we might not ever have had a chance to know that she would be just fine. Because if she was in the early stages of this, they would have killed her.
Mm. Wow. That's very sobering, isn't it?
Isn't it? Very.
I mean, I get goosebumps just imagining it. I'm so glad she's doing well. She is adorable. She's precocious. She's smart as a whip. And she lives so far away.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
It's difficult. But, you know, you just live with whatever hand you're dealt. And we, of course, use a lot of technology to stay in touch as much as possible. We're currently, we've gone through several iterations as she's grown and has likes and dislikes. Originally, we were using Skype, and I was able to call morning my time, evening her time, and read her bedtime stories, and we talked almost every day. And then when she got old enough to be able to actually use the iPad, she decided that she'd really rather play her games or do whatever she wanted to, watch a video or a movie, and rather than talking to Grammy and Poppy. And so she decided she didn't want to talk to us or anybody else. And so we've now progressed to WhatsApp. And mm-hmm. with that, we can send video messages. I was thinking of the old days when we had voicemails, but you know, these are a little different. So we do video messages, and we can do video and audio. And then, of course, we can send pictures and, you know, all the different ways we can just stay in touch.
Yeah. WhatsApp is amazing, isn't it?
It's lovely. It's so wonderful. And, of course, the fact that it's free, I mean, to mail her anything is incredibly expensive. And so, you know, to have this avenue to talk and to communicate, I just don't know what we would do without it.
I can't even imagine how long it would take to mail something with a stamp.
It takes 3 weeks for something from the time it leaves me until it gets to her. And this, our daughter's been in four countries in Africa. This is the first time she's been able to receive what I call snail mail. Yeah. Because, and even at that, in Nairobi, they don't have residential delivery service, but she can receive mail at school because it's a business. And so she gets, and our daughter's a teacher at the same school that Amina attends. So I can send snail mail to the school. And, you know, I sent a little tiny little swimsuit the other day, and it was $40 or something, which didn't seem bad at all, because when Heather was in the Congo, the minimum anything cost was over $100. Oh. That would be for like a FedEx envelope.
Oh, wow.
So when it costs that much to mail something and you're wanting to mail a relatively inexpensive item, it's awfully hard to kind of get over the idea that this postage is so much more than the price you paid for the item you're sending. And so sometimes you decide it's just not worth the cost to send
it. It's not sticker shock, it's stamp shock.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, another thing about WhatsApp is when you went over there not too long ago, I kind of got to go with you because you would send me pictures and we talked a couple of times. And
Yeah,
it was just great. I love it. I got to travel with you. Now, you also have you've created a Facebook group for grandparents who are separated from their grandchildren. Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay. It's called Grandparents Afar, A-F-A-R. And it is a closed group for the safety and security of the children. And we talk a lot about when we're going to see our grandchildren and when they're coming. So, you know, when we're going to be away from home and things that we really don't want out on Facebook, the general population.
Right.
And gosh, we've got folks from, got several from England, and not all of the grandchildren are long distance or over the pond, as I call it. Uh-huh. But we do have a number who do have grandchildren far, far away. But then we've also got some that have them just spread all over the United States. And, you know, it's still harder to grandparent when you're not in the same geographic location as your grandchildren. It takes a little more work, I think. But it's just a wonderfully supportive group. And so when we get word that our grandchildren are coming or that we're going to get to go see them, we share that. And everybody shares in the joy of that.
Yeah.
And people also talk about some of the challenges with having their grandchildren so far away. And sometimes there are some issues around in-laws and different things that make it even more difficult. And it's just really a very small group. I say we're small, but mighty. And it's just very, very supportive. And a place where we can post pictures, because our daughter doesn't want me putting Amina's picture on Facebook.
Right.
She's a teacher, and she had a situation where a student's picture got basically stolen off. Actually, it was on Twitter, but nonetheless, it helped our daughter realize that people can do that, you know, take a child's picture and do what they want to with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result of that, I no longer get to put pictures on my regular Facebook page. But she lets me put them on Grandparents Afar, because all the people in that group have been vetted to make sure that they are who they say they are. And, you know, there's nothing nefarious about it.
Right. It is a safe place, and it is a supportive place. And even though my grandchild is not nearly as far away, it's like the width of my small finger compared to yours. It is nice to share with other people who speak that same language of the absence of them in your everyday life or even weekly life. So I thank you for starting that and maintaining that.
Oh, you're very welcome. I get a tremendous amount of enjoyment and feeling of support from it.
Yeah, it's really good. I've got a post waiting to go up later. Hopefully today. Then I'm not going to spoil the surprise for you. You'll just have to see it.
I'm looking forward to it.
So as far as the 70273 goes, we now know that one of the reasons that you joined and have remained, you've been with me from the start on this. And part of that is friendship, because that's what friends like you and me do for each other. And an equally big part is your granddaughter and your realization that she could have received the two red X's were we in a different time and location. And you have recently, and by recently, I mean several months ago, we're just now getting around to recording this to talk about it. You recently, in terms of that, volunteered to be the financial manager for the 70273 project, which is such a gift to me, because when I deal with numbers, and I can't even say that word, I have to say landscape-oriented tables, I just go into a fetal position. But this is what you do all the time through your business, Life Matters, isn't it?
Yes.
So you want to tell me a little bit more about that, about Life Matters?
Well, Life Matters Financial Group is a very small group. There are two of us. And what we do for clients is extremely varied as from client to client. For some of our clients, we do what's typically called family office, where we completely take care of all of their financial and business matters as if they were our own. Mm-hmm. And that includes everything from bill paying to getting car tags to running down traffic tickets from Italy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just extremely varied in terms of what the diversity of projects. And other clients, typically we get clients when, or often, not typically, but often we get clients, new clients, when the person who took care of the family finances has left, either typically through divorce or death. And the remaining spouse that has never been the person who took care of the finances. And now they are left in a situation where they have no choice but to do this. And sometimes these are fairly elderly folks. Mm-hmm. My very first client was 75. My first paying client, my actual first client was my father-in-law, who was also 75. But my first paying client was 75, and she's now 91. Ooh. And so I've also got a client who just turned 100 a couple of weeks ago. And when we started working together 13 years ago, she was very capable of taking care of paying all her bills and keeping up with her finances. And I was hired more as a safety net, just to, because she was getting a little older and her daughter lived some distance away. And as time progressed, I was able to then start taking more and more of what she used to do and was capable of doing. And as it is now, she's in memory care and struggles with recognizing folks, and her memory is her short-term memory is just completely gone. Mm-hmm. So it's been interesting to see the transition over time of how, because of the work we did early on, I was able to just kind of pick up more and more of the pieces. I was very involved in helping her daughter convince her to give up her car when mm-hmm. she was 94. I took her to get her last driver's license at 93. And that was fun because her memory was, she was starting to have a lot of memory problems. But as you probably know, the test to get a new license asks a lot of questions like the distance you stop from a railroad crossing, which I doubt that many of us knows that number. So you have to study the booklet. And because of her memory, she had to study the booklet and then remember long enough to take the test and pass it. And so I worked with her for a couple of weeks, and we went over the booklet many, many times. And then I drove her to take her test, and she passed it with flying colors. Wow. And then we went and got ice cream to celebrate.
That's great. That's great. Well, you don't need to take me to get my driver's license, although, you know, I'd be happy for you too, because it would mean you'd be on this side of the world. But you do keep up with the finances for the 70273 project. And I am so grateful because I've been able to hand it off over here to the engineer, to Andy. He keeps up with the receipts. He sends them to you, and then you track them and you keep tabs on them. And what do you want to say about what you do and that arena?
Yeah. And then I send back reports so that you can see year by year. I break the reports as to 2016, 17, 18. Mm-hmm. So we can compare information. You know, obviously in 2016, there was a lot of startup cost. And then we've gone to so many, both you all and I have gone to international exhibitions as well as national exhibitions. And mm-hmm. there's all the cost associated with that. And I keep track of that by exhibition so that we know what it costs to go to England or Great Britain, and what it costs to go to Germany, and what it costs to go to Houston. And, you know, those are expenses that by and large you and Andy have funded out of your own pocket. And I often tell people when I'm at quilt shows talking about the project that you guys aren't wealthy people. I hope you don't mind my saying that. But, you know, some people may think, well, gosh, these people just have money to burn. And I know that you don't. And it is, you are sacrificing other things so that you can do what you do for the 70273. And I think it's really valuable to have the information readily available to know where it's being spent, what's it costing for postage, what's it costing for keeping the lights on and having internet and having a computer, and which, of course, we don't expense any of the computer expenses. So many of the expenses of your everyday living that are used, things that are used for the project, we don't even have on the sheets, on the list, on the reports. But nonetheless, it costs money. And of course, as with everything, it wears out faster when it's used more often and what have you. So you and Andy have just done such a tremendous job with what you've done in terms of keeping the finances of the 70273 project going. And I admire you tremendously and appreciate you because without your financial involvement, obviously this just absolutely wouldn't have happened.
Well, thank you. I try to be frugal too. I try to not be extravagant or waste what I consider to be the project's money.
And oh, that's very obvious.
Yeah, we're all reading between the lines on that one, aren't we?
Right.
So, yeah, you often say to people at these exhibits that you don't sew, and so this is your contribution to the project.
Exactly.
You did make some blocks, however.
Now, Amina and I made some blocks.
That's right, you did.
Yes, when she was home one summer, and because I don't sew, we glued our red X's on, and then you so sweetly made sure that I made some blocks separately. She made some blocks separately, and then we made some blocks together. Uh-huh. And you made sure that our blocks all got in the same quilt, and that touched me so much that you did that.
Well, I just want y'all to travel the world together. Not that you're not already doing that in a way, in many ways, but I wanted to make sure that when you get an opportunity to see your quilt in Paris, for example, you get to see it together, and it's all right there. That was important to me. We did go to a lot of exhibits together. You surprised me, delighted me, thrilled me when you made it possible to go to France with me for the first major European exhibit in June of 2017. Wasn't that a delightful trip?
That was magical.
I mean, so many people went to put in so many hours and so many stitches to make that magic happen. It was just, I still get moved when I think about walking into that 14th century temple.
And it was incredible.
Being surrounded by those quilts. And then,
and of course, that was the first time we'd ever seen, either one of us had ever seen that many quilts or even a lot of quilts.
That's right.
Hung together. And the experience of walking in, and they had a Requiem playing on the sound system very softly. And after the people started coming, you really couldn't hear the music because there, you know, there was just the noise from all of the number of people that were in the room. But to walk in there before it opened to the public and be able to share that. Well, as I recall, you and I just held each other and cried.
Yeah.
And I think Andy got a picture of that.
Yeah, we did. I had to leave. When I first crossed the threshold, I was just so overcome. I turned around and walked back out and composed myself. And then I went in and I cried all over you. So it was something I'll never forget, for sure. And what are some of the other exhibits you've been to?
I think the next one was probably Houston.
I think
at
so.
At the International Quilt Festival.
Uh-huh, that was in November of 2017.
And that was a totally new experience. And of course, we had a special exhibit, which was so beautifully hung.
Wasn't it?
And I helped in the interactive booth, and I got to help some at the special exhibition because there were so many people that it was just hard for you and Andy to be able to talk to everybody. So I got to spend a little time visiting with folks that came by, and you know, every story, and people would want to tell us their stories and why this was important to them and how it spoke to them. And so many people knew nothing about it until they walked in and saw that. And I would say, can I tell you about it? And they'd say, yeah, kind of sometimes with some hesitancy, but it was like, what is this? And, so then I got to tell them, you know, how it came to be and what we're doing with commemorating the 70,273 people whose lives were taken by virtue of their having a disability. And that's a topic that almost everybody can relate to. They either have a loved one or they, we had one man whose family had been in Germany and had experienced it firsthand. There were just so many moving stories, which that's the truth with the case with all of the any quilt show, because of the nature of the quilts.
Right.
And people just want to tell us yeah. their experience and why this is meaningful to them. And as you well know, you had a notebook to write down some of those stories and to get names of people so that we could have them later to refer back to. And I know you've got all those notebooks with all that information.
Yeah. It's such an honor, isn't it?
Oh, it truly is.
Yeah. And you've kind of touched on this. I imagine that people might ask why we go to the exhibits, because it is an expense to us, although now people are starting to pitch in and help cover expenses. And for that, we are very, very, very grateful. And I think that's because they realize, as we realized, we being you and Andy and I realized, that this is an exhibit that needs some explanation and it needs the stories told and the stories received. And you can't do that if you're not there.
That's right.
So I think it's an expense that is, it is worthwhile. And like I said, I do appreciate that organizations are now seeing that and offering to cover the travel expenses.
Well, and I have to commend you and Andy for really doing your homework before this got launched, in recognizing the need to set up a 501c3 organization so that people could donate with tax-deductible dollars, setting up the provenance forms and thinking about where this might lead in terms of the needs of having the permission to use people's blocks, to put their blocks together with other people's blocks, all of that you did. And I can tell you that this was a topic of conversation at the Reno show, which is the last show I was at, the mm-hmm. Truckee Meadows in Reno. And people said, wow, it really took a lot of foresight to think through where this might lead. And you absolutely are to be commended for the work that you did in setting it up correctly, let's say, because so that you have the ability to do the things you want to do with the blocks and with the quilts.
Well, thank you for that. It just, you know, in that one big fat crazy idea whooshed in, it was pretty complete. I just followed instructions and did it. After Houston, I guess, was January of this year, which found us, .. Take it away, Terry.
All right. Well, you and Andy and I met up in Jersey, in the Channel Islands. You and Andy had gone to Rochester, to Durham. Well, actually to Iceland and then to Durham. And I had come through Iceland as well, basically directly. I went San Francisco to Reykjavik to London and then to Jersey. And so our flights got landed in Jersey in about within about 2 or 3 hours of each other. Yeah. And we had the good fortune of being hosted by Kim Mullins, yeah. who just did a phenomenal job of pulling together quilts and getting quilts made by every parish on the island of Jersey.
Yeah.
And then getting it put together in an exhibition. And all of this was around Holocaust Memorial Day. Yes. So the timing was just really exquisite. And so we met and we stayed at Kim's lovely home with her husband, Stephen. And then we all together went to Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
And Sharon Howell picked us up at the airport.
Yep.
And you went and stayed with Lucy Ilse Is it Eels or Isles?
Isles, I think.
Corner. And I stayed at a lovely bed and breakfast, and I will never forget Andy carrying my suitcase up the stairs. That was such a chivalrous thing and such an appreciated thing that he carried my suitcase up the stairs in the bed and breakfast, lovely, lovely bed and breakfast. And so the Rochester Cathedral was just an indescribable experience as well. Help me with the numbers. There were 15,000 people commemorated. Is that right?
14,240, I believe.
I'm sorry?
14,240, I believe.
Okay. And again, they were hanging from the rafters. Many of the quilts had been made specifically to hang from the rafters, so they were quite long. The quilts that were at their, I don't know, what would you call what was up at the chancel?
Big.
Amazing.
Just really big, yeah. Really amazing. They still leave me speechless. I don't think words have been invented.
Yeah, it's something that people would almost have to go to the website to experience.
Yes.
But anyway, that whole experience, they put together a lovely reception, was over 200 people, as I recall.
Yes.
You gave a lovely talk, and it was just, again, magical. And from there, since you had already been to Durham, you and Andy needed to get back home, and so we went our separate ways, and I went on to Durham, and was able to be there for the Holocaust Memorial Day, which was, they had a service in Durham Cathedral, and it was so moving, so touching. The grandson of a Holocaust survivor, a man whose grandfather had been in the Warsaw Ghetto, was the guest speaker, and there wasn't a dry eye in the place. What was so impressive with that is that the British really understand the whole Holocaust situation in a way that I don't think many Americans who never were elsewhere at the time could possibly understand, because it would, you know, they had bombs dropping on them.
Right.
And so it's very important to them that their children understand the significance. And so the church was absolutely filled with groups of school children. And as part of the day, the Memorial Day, we had children coming, different groups of children, class by class, who came, and the women in Durham had put together packets of block-making materials, and the children would come, and I say children, I would say they were what we would call middle school or high school, probably, aged, and they would sit and make blocks and be told, and I got to talk to the children about what the project is all about. And that was a memory I will remember all my days.
It was something.
You have the people who were involved in that were Margaret
Jackson.
Margaret Jackson and Chrissy Fitzgerald.
Uh-huh.
And okay. Mary Turner. And who were some of the others? There were some others.
Yeah, Mary Turner was very involved in it, did a lot of the quilts.
Very,
They were all members of the Coxhoe Quilters group.
Okay. Yes, and so I got to meet several of them. We actually had dinner at the cafeteria there in the church. It was so warm and inviting, and again, just beautiful and meaningful to everybody involved.
I'm reading right now. I'm looking at the blog post I wrote about your visit there, and you said to me, this is a quote that meant so much to me. I put it in big letters in red. Our hope for being a compassionate, caring world lies with the children.
Yes.
That's what you had to say after you spent time with the children that day.
Yes.
It was just, these are just amazing experiences.
They truly are.
And then recently, and you've already mentioned Reno, recently you were at the Reno, the Truckee Meadows quilt show. And it was, I think you told me that we're like the first outside special exhibit they've ever allowed.
Yes, Cindy Cavallo was instrumental in getting the Truckee Meadows Quilt Guild to agree to do our exhibition. And she was a champion in terms of getting it done and getting it all set up. And she and her husband, Steve, did so much work to make that happen. It was fun to be part of that with them.
They're delightful people.
And yes, they are.
The Truckee Meadows Guild has been involved from day one. They've just been
so one of their quilts was at Houston as well.
Uh-huh, that's right. It was. They've just been so supportive. So, yeah, I am just so honored that you're on this journey with me and in such a big way, as keeping the finances straight and dealing with the landscape-oriented tables that you like to call spreadsheets.
That we call spreadsheets.
Everybody else in the world calls them that. I'm getting.
Well, you might have noticed that I do not send you spreadsheets.
No.
I turn them into PDFs before I send them to you, because I know that you have an aversion to those horizontally landscaped?
Is that landscape-oriented tables.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I can now say the word, but I never without a stumble or a stammer before it eventually falls out of my mouth. It's just, you know, it's just one of my quirks, or as my daughter would say, it's part of the charm.
That's true. Well, it's an honor for me to be able to do it. And I'm just thrilled that I have a skill that is useful, and that especially given that I don't sew, that I've found a different way to participate.
Oh, yeah. And it's just one of many ways that you participate. You are always an encourager and a supporter in the Facebook campfire, and you're an administrator on the page, so you help me keep that going. In addition to your two groups that you have, we mentioned the Grandparents Afar. I didn't mention the other one, which is Until You've Been There, right?
Yes, yes.
Before we go, tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, Until You've Been There came from the idea that there are certain things in life that we as humans can't really relate fully until we've been there.
Right.
And so it's also a closed group, and is designed to be a place for really deep conversations. Mm-hmm. Some of the conversations that have been on there are, one, for example, was a young man who happens to be my son, but that's neither here nor there, actually. And he was volunteering for a needle exchange program in San Francisco. And one day he had an experience with a homeless woman who was needing to exchange her needles. Mm-hmm. Drug needles. And what he learned out of that exchange, and so he shared that on Until You've Been There. Mm-hmm. We've got a number of people who have had some really painful life experiences, and there are other people who have had similar experiences. And again, they've all been there, or somebody's been there on the group. When Robin Williams committed suicide, was when the page really launched, because, or it really took off, I should say, because it was an outlet for people to talk about suicide in their families or of their loved ones. And we had quite many, many days of people sharing their own experiences. Some people are people I've known most of my adult life, and I did not know that they had dealt with terribly traumatic pain over suicide. Other people, there are also people on the page that aren't people I know that have just found it and contribute. And it's a place for community about things that really matter, that are really deep.
Yes.
And a place that people share those, share the depth of their experiences.
Right.
So there's not a lot of activity on it, but when there is activity, it's meaningful activity.
Yes. Yes, that's a good way to say it. I agree. Well, Terry, unless you have anything else to add, I have one final question. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, well, here's my last question to you. I can think of several answers, but I'm going to ask you to tell me one thing that's unique about you, delightfully unique, that you're proud of, that you own.
Well, the first thing that came to mind doesn't qualify for the rest of that, which is that I can drive a forklift with a carpet pole on it and actually make it pick up carpet and move it around in a warehouse. That's a little known fact that I'm actually quite proud of.
Yeah.
Because it was sheer determination and a situation that I had no choice but to learn how to do it, and I did. So that's one thing. I think probably the thing I'm most proud, well, the thing I'm most proud of is obvious, is my children.
Yeah.
They are lovely, contributing human beings who make a difference in the world. And our daughter, as I mentioned earlier, is a school teacher in Nairobi, has been teaching for 14 years in international schools in four different countries. She's been in four countries, she's taught in three. And our son is what I call an old soul.
Yeah.
He's incredibly deep, very thoughtful, very kind and loving, always has been from when he was literally 2 years old. My best friend said, Terry, he has such a sweet spirit, and he always has. It's been there from the time he was an infant. So those are the what I'm most proud of. The other thing I was going to say is that we moved to California when I was 40 to go back to school so I could get my undergraduate degree, and which meant moving our entire family, a major upheaval in our lives in support of me. And I was having so much fun, I stayed and got my master's degree as well. But that was a truly life-altering event for all of us. Heather has said she would never have ended up in Africa had she not had the experience of living in a place that an international community, which Palo Alto is. And so I think that making the decision to make that move, it was a truly the most valuable thing I ever could have done for my family and for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I hope, you know, how amazing and loving and kind and intelligent I think you are, and how grateful I am to you, not just for your friendship, but to all you bring to the 70273 Project and to the world as a whole. You spill goodness every day into the world that somebody benefits from. So I thank you for that, and I thank you for giving me this time today, because I know you don't have much of that. And I'm just grateful that you let me have some of it. Thank you so much, Terry.
You're very, very welcome, and thank you for your kind words. They mean the world to me.
I love you. I'll talk to you later.
Love you too. Bye-bye. Bye.